B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Bill, I hope this finds you well. A little bit of a different one for you. Jimmy Garoppolo has said you stayed in touch with him, including congratulating him when he led the 49ers to the Super Bowl. So I was just wondering if, like Robert Kraft, you've reached out at all to Tom Brady this offseason to congratulate him on winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, again, Chris, I think I'll keep those conversations.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out of town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper,
hey, Murray.
Gasper,
hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper,
hey, Murray.
Gasper,
hey, Murray.
Gasper,
hey, Murray.
Bill, I hope this finds you well. A little bit of a different one for you. Jimmy Garoppolo has said you stayed in touch with him, including congratulating him when he led the 49ers to the Super Bowl. So I was just wondering if, like Robert Kraft, you've reached out at all to Tom Brady this offseason to congratulate him on winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, again, Chris, I think I'll keep those conversations privately between myself and the other people that are involved. Appreciate the question.
Thanks, Bill.
It's the best. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So, you know, when I heard that, Chris, I just was, oh, there's so much to pull apart from that. There really is. Just how you started. Hi, Bill. I hope this finds you well. And I know you. Like, that's like, oh, it's to use Maz's phrase, like, you feel the knife coming out of the sheath. Like, Chris is going to do it proper. He's going to be respectful. But what that really is, like, I said it yesterday, I hope this finds you well, is how your a-hole boss begins an email before they criticize you. For example, like last week, I know that Zoe had some issues with the water heater. Just hypothetically speaking, it would go like this if it was Beasley Management writing to Zoe. Hi, Zoe. I hope this finds you well. I heard you needed to miss work on Friday after difficulty with your water heater. If there's anything we can do for you or your family, don't hesitate to reach out. Sincerely, the Beasley Management. Like, there's a jab there. And I knew the jab. I know you, Chris.
There was no jab.
Oh, Chris, I know you.
There was no jab. I know people think.
It's so smarmy.
It wasn't a jab. Look, was I trying to soften him up a little? I was. But see, what's happened now with all these Zoom interviews is that everybody begins with a pleasantry. It's Felger's worst nightmare. So I knew I was going to ask a difficult question. So if I don't begin with a pleasantry like everybody else, and it also had to be a pleasantry that I could just say without him having to acknowledge me, because the last time I did one of these with him, I think I said something similar and there was like no acknowledgement. So I just asked the question. So I knew if I was like, hey, Bill, how you doing today?
Hope this finds you well.
He wasn't going to acknowledge that. So I came up with another pleasantry where I didn't need a response from him and then moved on to my question.
And then just how, Chris, you, like, you can just feel the tone for the tonality from him too. Like, I'm going to keep that to myself, you mother. And by the way, Bill, say his name. Say his name, people. I'm going to keep the conversations with people. Say his name. Say Tom. Say Brady. Say his name. Oh, it's just so, there's so much to pick apart from. It was my favorite clip of the week, Chris. You made my week.
No.
I texted you. I was like, bravo.
You did text me.
Oh, the best. Oh, it's so good. And by the way, he hasn't called. He hasn't. I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't even watch the game. You know why? Because, again, it's been a few months. I know. Tom won. And that's a tough pill for Bill to swallow.
I have to say this. Jim, if I could do the Gene Deckerhoff voice, I would have asked the question. How would Gene Deckerhoff have asked my question?
Oh, man. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Now, how'd you start it again? It was...
Bill, I hope this finds you well.
Bill, I hope this finds you well. I was wondering if you've talked to Tom Brady, the man, the buck of the team, or are you still being whiny about it? You can't give credit to the one guy who was really the most important piece over the last 20 years. Tom Brady's the man, the Bucs of the team. Bucs win, Bucs win. And with that, by the way, I'd like to make a formal announcement. This is an announcement. Announcement time. Announcement time here on Gasper and Murray.
Okay.
Yours truly will be in attendance when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers raise the championship flag on Thursday night, September 9th, against the Dallas Cowboys. Yes, it's official. Yours truly is. It's booked the trip with my buddy. So what's your Pats road game this year? Oh, when Brady and the Bucks open up on Thursday night to start the season. Yep. Yeah, it's true. No, this isn't a bit. I'll be there that Thursday night. Oh, yeah, I know. I haven't got over that. What a delicious month and a half that was. That January into February. It really was the best. What a pep in my step. Oh, you haven't heard the last of those bits either, too. Going into week four, when Brady and the Bucks come back, oh, we're going to replay all of those songs, all those bits, day in, day out on Felger and Maz, hour after hour. Because the Bucks win, and Brady's the man. I hope this finds you well, Bill. Here, I'm going to pull out the knife from the sheath and stab you right in the back like Chris Cashmer of Channel 5. All right, so that said, I mean,
yeah.
What do you think? Was that phone call made, Chris?
If I had to guess, and I'm just guessing, uh-huh. The answer is no.
Okay.
No.
Well, now that I got that out of my system, again, big announcement. Yes, I will be there. Bucks Cowboys opening night NFL season, Thursday, September 9th. Bucks win, Bucks win. So you've been down there doing your stand-ups for Channel 5.
Yep.
Like, I'm here outside Gillette Stadium. Yep. Me, Chris Casper. Here's what's going on. Big quarterback competition.
Yeah.
So you had the mandatory mini camp earlier this week. First 2 days, Cam Newton, not so great. Mac Jones shining, apparently. I know you're still not the believer in Mac Jones.
I am not, no. Not long term. I mean, look, I think he'll be fine. He'll be like a replacement level quarterback. But, do I think he's going to be Brady? No. Do I think he'll even be Garoppolo? No.
So give me some other takeaways, though. So what you're hearing, things that you think are positives for the Patriots in this mini camp these first 3 days, and some negatives as well.
So just keep this in mind that I was not actually allowed into the mini camp because we're still under COVID protocols with the NFL and it's only one per outlet. And so Channel 5 needs the video. So we send a videographer in. So while I was outside Gillette Stadium, that was just for the background shot.
Oh.
But I do think, and I know you've heard this from Bedard and we played that Tom Curran sound yesterday on Felger and Maz. I think Josh McDaniels likes him some Mac Jones.
So that's the positive news coming about Mac Jones is simply, you think, based on Josh McDaniels.
I do. I think it's nice for him to have somebody he can teach the system to, somebody who can run the system, somebody who basically is a system quarterback. And a lot of these guys, whether it's Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, I throw Josh McDaniels in this category too, but you just wouldn't think it because he had Tom Brady most of the time he was here. But people forget about the time he had in Denver. Obviously, it blew up at the end. But he started 6-0, and he did it with Kyle Orton. Mm. He really believes in his system and that he's kind of this quarterback whisperer and that if he could just, like, remote control the quarterback on the field, they'd never have a bad play. And Shanahan's like that, and so is McVay. And I think Mac Jones is the ideal blank slate, empty vessel that he can sort of fill up and say, just do what I tell you to do. And there's a much greater likelihood he'll do it than Cam. Where I think we're headed is, can Josh McDaniels convince Bill Belichick, as one of the few people left in the organization who I think can challenge Bill, has some real sway with Bill now with Ernie Adams gone, can he convince him that it's worth moving on from Cam Newton altogether? Because Cam Newton is either the starter or he's not on this team. Can he convince him before the season starts or 2 weeks into it, we need to go to Mac Jones? I think the answer is no.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think he would take the backup role. I don't know where there's another job for him in the NFL, but for him to, I think I can understand, given his status in the league, former MVP, all of that. I still think his status in the league is among the most respected by his peers.
Yeah.
I think that's evident. I just don't think he would take that role. So, yeah, I think he would go to Bill and say, hey, you know, if this is what it's going to be, then cut me. And I, you know what a hint of that is, too, is like what? The reports of the bad body language, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, early on when Mac Jones, I think it was day two, getting more reps than him and he's kind of off by himself.
Like, yes. Yeah.
You know, I don't think he wants to accept that kind of role, that he's not going to be the man.
No, I would agree with that. And you know, Bill's like one of those bosses, we've all had him, where you have to convince him it's his idea, even though it's really yours.
Yeah.
Like, in order for him to act on it, he has to believe it's his idea. And can Josh do that? So I think the Mac Jones, the quarterback watch is all we're talking about, but there's a reason, because I think there's some real intrigue. And it's not just Mac Jones versus Cam Newton. I think it's also Josh McDaniels versus Bill Belichick, in a way. The other thing that's interesting, and Mike Giardi's been talking about this a lot, I don't think they've done enough at wide receiver.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think they've done enough at wide receiver, and I think that they are going to be poking around for another wide receiver. Now, I don't think it's going to be a big name like an Odell Beckham Jr., but I've heard some stuff. This is also, I would say this is like 75% my opinion, maybe 80% my opinion, and 20% stuff I've heard. I think maybe a guy like Christian Kirk in Arizona.
Okay.
That's a player the Patriots like coming out. Arizona drafted Rondale Moore. They brought in A.J. Green. They like some of their other young receivers. Last year, the contract for Christian Kirk, and they're thin at running back. So maybe there's a deal that involves draft picks and Sony Michel. Maybe it's Sony Michel and N'Keal Harry, because he went to Arizona State. The Cardinals need tight end. Some people think Harry would be better as sort of a hybrid wide receiver tight end. I'd keep an eye on that. There's maybe some sort of deal that could be made, but I think the Patriots recognize that there's a wide receiver issue here potentially, and normally teams let it play out in camp, but I would not be shocked if by opening day there's another wide receiver of some substance added to this roster.
I'm glad you brought this up, because this is one of the things that stood out to me this week with this mandatory minicamp, is that they're thin at that position. And I liked the addition of Nelson Agholor in the offseason. I didn't like the cost, but I liked that they signed him. He had a really good year last year with Vegas. And I liked it just simply because they need help at wide receiver. Same thing with Kendrick Bourne. But what do you know? You read about these two this week, and it's nothing but drops. And Agholor has had this issue in the past. You know, talk to an Eagles fan about Nelson Agholor.
That guy who saved the baby in the fire was like, yeah, I caught the baby, unlike Agholor. Like that guy? Oh, that's the greatest.
And so old Frying Pan Hands here is up to his old tricks this week. So, not a good look, and I know you've talked about this before, even with these signings, Chris. They are thin at that position, and it was one of the reasons I think you were, you know, saying it would be good. It would be beneficial if they were in on Julio Jones and able to land him. They need a stud guy like that, especially if they're going to end up going to Mac Jones sooner than later to try to get him some help at that position.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And what's interesting to me, too, is, and I had Doug Kide of Nesson.com, who's one of the best Patriots beat reporters out there, on the Take Five podcast. Since you're doing all your, you know, stuff, I'm going to plug
away
my stuff. Yeah, Take Five podcast. You can download that.
Free.
Wherever you get your podcast, it's free. WCVB.com. Tweet it out. And so Doug was great, but one of the little debates we had in the show is, and he's dead on with this, the Patriots are really big on this two tight end offense. And I think that their plan, at least initially, is like, well, we have the two tight ends. That will compensate for not having enough at receiver. To which I say, bollocks. That doesn't work unless you have an elite tight end, unless it's Gronk and Hernandez, or it's like George Kittle and somebody else, or Travis Kelce or Tony Gonzalez. And Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry are good. They're certainly upgrades over what they've had the last 2 years when they've had the lowest tight end targets in the NFL, the Patriots have. But neither one of these guys has ever had 700 yards receiving in a season. And I've seen this movie before in 2006, and it was called Benjamin Watson and Daniel Graham, and it doesn't work. So that's one thing. You know, I think they're banking on this two tight end thing, which is already not off to a great start with Jonnu Smith skipping OTAs and then getting hurt at mandatory minicamp. I like these guys. I think they'll help the offense. I think they're good signings. But if you think you're going to build an offense around these two tight ends, good luck to you. You're the 2019 Eagles. That team did make the playoffs at 9-7, but that's because the NFC stunk. And also, that team, that was the game you attended in Philly.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That was their offense.
Boring wins I've ever watched in my entire life.
There you go. And the Patriots held that team to 255 yards of offense, and the two leading receivers were Goddard and Ertz that day. And you know what I love? I love this. This is so Patriot fan. So I pointed this out on Twitter, and somebody came at me and was like, yeah, but the Patriots have better receivers than the 2019 Eagles. Who is the best receiver on the 2019 Eagles?
Nelson Agholor.
Nelson Agholor. There you go. But now he's in our uniform, so magically he's so much better.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I didn't like reading that. Yeah. Jared Stidham threw a dime to Nelson Agholor. Clang. Day two. Jared Stidham threw a deep bomb to Nelson Aguilar. Clang. Old frying pan hands. Something else stood out to me from the mandatory minicamp this week. We'll get to that and your Patriots calls and calls on pretty much anything that we've covered at this point. Coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk. You're gross. Let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Chris Gasper. Oh my God. Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jacoby Myers is a pain in the ass for anybody who wants to try and leapfrog him. He is, to me, the most consistent guy out there day in and day out. I like Kendrick Bourne, even though he's had some drops. Aguilar, TBD. And Hunter Henry has been very reliable. You're right about Jonnu Smith. You can't miss all the OTAs based on principle, then show up and hurt your hammy and just be a coach in shoulder pads and shorts, which is what he was the last couple days.
Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. And what's that say about the state of the Patriots wide receiver core? If Jacoby Myers, and all due respect to him, because I think he's a ballsy player and a good player, but limited in terms of his ability. Like, if he's been one of your standout wide receivers, again, like Chris was saying in the prior segment, like, what's that say about their wide receiver core? That it's Jacoby Myers is your standout again? And you spent all this money on guys like Aguilar and Bourne? Not a good look.
No, it's not. And I like Jacoby Myers. I think he's a good number three. He might even be able to be a two. But I feel like we saw last year that once he had a couple of good games, like he had that game at the Jets, and teams started to show more attention, pay more attention to him, he wasn't as productive. Like, if he's a number one and teams are game planning for him and he's drawing the other team's best defender and defenses are trying to stop him, he doesn't have the talent at this point in his career, and he doesn't have the physical talent to be able to still be a really effective player. Like, he needs to be down the depth chart and get better matchups, in my opinion, to be a truly effective player.
And so the other thing that stood out to me this week, Chris, that wasn't quarterback related was, it was something that was reported by your guy Doug Kide at Nesson,
yeah,
that Chase Winovich missed the whole camp. So it started off like, you know, I remember reading something from Mike Reese's pieces early on, like, hey, where's Winovich? Well, Josh Uche's looked good so far. You know, they have the additions of Matt Judon, Kyle Van Noy. Shouldn't this kid be here? And, well, he missed the whole camp, and I think Doug Kide, to use his terminology, was reportedly nothing major is what a source told him. But I don't know. You think Belichick's happy with that? Like, especially with that kid's big mouth and big opinions and his stupid hair? Like, I just think, like, he's good at rushing the passer. He's limited against the run. You have real depth at that position now. I don't think he's a lock to make the team.
Yeah, I don't think he is either. I like him. The one thing I'd say, and I'm trying to remember who Doug brought this up on the podcast. He said, don't underestimate the fact that Winovich has special teams ability. And his special he was like in the top five, I think, in special team snaps, Doug said, last year on the team. And he's been there before. And also, remember, they used him as an off-the-line linebacker. So that is a guy that I think could be on the fence there. There could be some surprise cuts or maybe guys they end up dealing away when they get to sort of the roster cut down here. I think that's definitely something that could happen. Maybe there's a Duke Dawson thing here where somebody just goes for a fifth, a sixth, a seventh at the end of it. But Winovich might have more life than we think because of his versatility, ability to play special teams and off the line linebacker. Just to go back to Jacoby Myers, I was just looking at his stats from last season because I was like, I don't know, am I framing this wrong? Like, I remember he had the huge game against the Jets, and then I thought he was not great in some of the other games. And I'm like, oh yeah, he was okay. I think I'm pretty right. Do you know he did not have a touchdown catch last year?
Really?
It says zero. I'm looking at the game log, and it says zero.
Granted, I've also wiped most of last season from my mind.
It says 59 catches for 729 yards and zero touchdowns. And that's your best wide receiver?
Well, Cam Newton did only throw, what, eight?
Eight.
So I guess, yeah. No, I mean,
and I guess, to quote Giselle, because Jacoby threw two, you know, he cannot, you know, throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time.
That's why I think he had touchdowns, because he was throwing them.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, that team last year, what a mess. Oh, you know what? Well, I got you here, and we're talking about this. What did you make of how Bill Belichick approached the Stephon Gilmore situation, which is a holdout?
Yeah, that was weird. I still don't understand the weather thing.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I think happened. I think they thought they might be able to get him into the minicamp with some sort of promise of what they were going to do. And Gilmore and his agent, Jason Shea, who, by the way, was the agent for Deion Branch in 2006. I think they were like, no, we're not doing this. We're not coming like until it's like a done deal. And I think that's where the tone changed. I think they thought they could go to Gilmore, because it does behoove both sides, Jim, to do something here. His base salary is really low. It's $7 million. He's another $500,000 in per-game roster bonuses, so he can make $7.5 million. But because of all the adjustments they've made, his cap hit is $16.265 million, which is the highest on the team. So it behooves both sides to do something here, and I think they thought maybe like a promise of we'll do something would get him in after day one, and then it became apparent it wouldn't, and Bill went back to we'll deal with the players who were here.
Bob and Needham on the Patriots in this mandatory mini camp this week.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Chris, I have a question for you, but first a comment for Murray. Hey, I like you, will never get over Brady leaving here. Kraft's such a brilliant businessman. Brady's on the cover of Madden with Mahomes this year. So he for $50 million, the marketing and the merchandising that he lost with Brady, along with, you know, primetime games, did he ever consider that? I'll never get over it, Murray. But anyways, Chris, I don't know if you were listening when Murray, Felger, and Maz both had, like all three of them had them at 7-2 with Cam Newton starting quarterback, because that's why Mac Jones shouldn't play. I'm like, do they have the 85 Bears defense this year? I mean, how the hell are they going to go 7-2 if they get the same quarterback play from Cam Newton? They reeled off the Jets 2 wins. How do you know that? They're going to be in close games against everyone if Cam Newton is a starter. Unless there's a miracle that happens and he can throw the ball this year. And about Jacoby Myers, by the way, he was the best receiver on the team last year. He missed the first 5 or 6 games because they had to play N'Keal Harry. Until he got that concussion, he never played.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, they sort of buried him, and then obviously they couldn't. They needed all the production they could get. I do think this defense is going to be good.
Yeah,
I really do. I think especially if they get Gilmore squared away, I think they're going to have a really good defense.
Yeah, they're going to be winning games like 2014, 2017, 17-14.
It's going to be like that 2019 Philly game you went to every week.
Oh, great. Well, at least, you know, it'll be a little bit more palatable, and they have real linebackers, unlike last year. Like, that was, you know, Mike talked about that this week, too. As weak as they were at wide receiver and especially at tight end, linebacker was a mess last year, too.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, they upgraded. Obviously, you get Hightower back, and then friend of Felger and Maz, Kyle Van Noy, back as well.
But just looking at it, you know, so we went through, win. And looking at the schedule early, like, it's kind of a cream puff schedule that first couple of months. It is. Like, you've got the Dolphins at home, and I'm reading that Tua Tagovailoa threw 5 picks, like, on the first day of their mandatory minicamp. Like,
yes.
Then at the Jets, Saints, like, who's their quarterback going to be? Bucks, loss. Texans week 5, you'll win that. Like, is Deshaun Watson even going to be playing? Like, that first few months, there's not a lot of very difficult games on that schedule. Cowboys and Bucks, maybe.
You know, it's funny, you're reading the schedule to me, and I know schedule day is such a big deal, but I've already sort of put it out of my mind, forgotten about the schedule to a degree, at least the order and everything of it. And as you're listing those teams, and I'm thinking about the quarterbacks, it's reminding me of like the 2011 season when it was like, this week you get to play Curtis Painter.
Yeah.
This week you get to play Tyler Palko. This week you get to play Vince Young. Remember that?
Yeah, I do very well. And then it all came home to roost in that Super Bowl that I had no business being in. Let's go to Joe and Lincoln on the Kemba Walker trade, the big news from yesterday. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. Sorry to bring it back to the other.
No, all good.
No, it's fine.
But so Kemba Walker, I always had a hard time with him. It's my prejudice. Smiling superstars don't make with me. All credit to Magic Johnson. I want the scowling, angry superstar who hates to lose. And Kemba never was that. And also, you know, he was a good shooter, except at the end he wasn't. But all he could do on defense was take charges. He was not a good ball distributor. I did not think he made his teammates better particularly. And so I'm kind of intrigued by Peyton Pritchard and wondered, you know, never got a chance to really shine. And is he really just not very good? Or do you guys think he actually, if he got some playing time, he could actually show something?
So I think Peyton Pritchard, even though, you know, different, I think Peyton Pritchard and Mac Jones are sort of similar in that people early on want to like ascribe a level to them that I don't think they're going to reach. Remember when we were getting the Steve Nash calls about being Pritchard at the beginning of the year.
I mean, he played well, but he doesn't seem to be ready to move into that starting role. I don't think so. Like, so that's obviously now with him gone, we talked about it earlier in that last hour. Like, all right, so what? Presumably the answer is Marcus Smart. He's going to be your point guard right now if he's still on the team. Like, yuck. And then Peyton Pritchard, I don't think he's ready for it. So there's a massive hole there.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think actually that Smart was good at times distributing. I mean, if he's just going to be a straight-up distributor. But I think Smart, it's like one of those things like you've talked about this from time to time. You know, sometimes you're just in a relationship and you need to reform the other person, but it's just too far gone. Like, they're too ensconced in their habits. Like, he would have to go to another team, I think, to change. So he was good last year as a distributor, and I thought he did a great job running the point and passing. But you're going to have to accept some crazy threes and some terrible hero shots. And his idea that it's like, well, I mean, if I take this shot, it's just as good as Tatum or Brown taking it with the game on the line. That's never going to change as long as he's here.
Jay in the car on that trade yesterday. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, yeah, thanks for picking it up. I actually like this trade, and I like the idea of having some more versatility of the bigs. The idea of having Al Horford on the team as a seasoned veteran, I'd like him to see him backing up the four and the five and just being a veteran presence on the bench. And that would then, what could you get for a point guard if you traded Smart and Tristan Thompson, keeping the two young guys as bigs as well?
Is there anyone out there that, you know, could you get a name back if those two were involved?
I mean, I'll bring in B-Rob on this. I mean, the guy I keep going back to is Lonzo Ball. I don't know how Tristan Thompson would fit in New Orleans. B-Rob said Smart's value is down. I would think for one of these younger teams that needs a little more grit, a little more defense, that Smart maybe would have some value. This guy's not a point guard, but I wonder about this too. I saw that one of my guys who's on my All-Malik team, Josh Hart, basically wants out of New Orleans. He's not a point guard, but that's a guy I would be interested in if I were the Celtics.
Yeah, he'd certainly be a nice fit. Getting one of those guys, Lonzo, I'm not going to bore you guys with the sign and trade stuff. It's going to be really, really tough to do. But
wouldn't it hard cap you?
It would hard cap you, and you're kind of too close to that, so that's their problem. But one place to keep an eye on with Smart would be, I think, like the Grizzlies, for instance. Like an up-and-coming team that could use a veteran voice in the backcourt. And I'd love a guy like Kyle Anderson on the wing, someone who could, you know, take some pressure off of Tatum and Brown defensively and maybe, you know, again, give a fresh voice in the locker room there if they need a kind of change of scenery.
I wouldn't mind D'Anthony Melton.
Sure. Be a great young prospect.
Well, when we come back, I want to hear that Gasper question to Belichick one more time. And I have questions for Chris. Like, how'd you come up with it? Yeah. How long was that in the old take crock?
This is like what's that show? The Actor Studio?
Yeah, inside the Gasper Studio. Yeah. We'll get to that coming up, and we'll get to five questions for Chris Gasper.
What was your inspiration, Chris?
Yeah, all coming up next here on 98.5 of Sports Up.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 the Sports Up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. Is 98.5 the Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 the Sports Hub.
Bill, I hope this finds you well. A little bit of a different one for you. Jimmy Garoppolo has said you stayed in touch with him, including congratulating him when he led the 49ers to the Super Bowl. So I was just wondering if, like Robert Kraft, you've reached out at all to Tom Brady this offseason to congratulate him on winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, again, Chris, I think I'll keep those conversations privately between myself and the other people that are involved. Appreciate the question.
Thanks, Bill.
Just the best. My favorite clip of the week. Maybe of 2021. There's just so much to pull out of that thing. Yeah, Chris. I think I'll keep that to myself, you mother. So I do want to know, just for my own sick curiosity, because I know you, like, you know, you're always well prepared. You put in the work. This isn't me showing up last minute with a microphone like, Bill, it's been like 4 months. How come you haven't talked to Tom? Click, like Zoom is over. How much thought you put into this? Like, tell me how this you came up with this. And by the way, why has no one else asked it in the last 4 months?
And I was a little surprised by that. So that's sort of where it started. You know, I knew it was our last session with Bill before training camp, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, man, no one's asked him this. And if we don't ask him, well, it's still the off season, because once training camp starts, he's very much on to, you know, basically 2021 in the season. He's just going to say, look, that's last season. Everybody's trying to get to the Super Bowl. So that's where it started for me, was thinking no one's asked him this all off season. This is our last shot. And then I really spent some time, you know, the night before, just kind of thinking about what's the right way to ask this now, because some time has passed. And that's where, like, you know, Felger was like, I would have asked him, how did it feel to watch Brady? I mean, first of all, I think that's a little bit of an antagonizing question, but I also think so much time has passed that it's like he could be like, oh, well, I don't know, Chris. That was 6 months ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I don't think you can ask it like that. So I really, and this is something that I give Bill Belichick a lot of credit for, and something that has really helped my career, and I have to give him credit for helping me, is that because he does parry away these questions so easily, so often, even if there's just like one wrong word or the syntax is off just a little bit, he'll jump on it and dismiss your question. It really does force you a lot of times to think about how you're going to ask your question and try and be more precise. So I really put some thought into it. And really, I think the eureka moment for me was like, hey, wait, like, you stayed in touch with Jimmy Garoppolo. So it's not unprecedented for you to stay in touch with a former quarterback. So let me ask it that way. Like,
Chris, when you said it, I was like, oh, he's got him.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're like, you're thinking about it and you're like, well, you did stay in touch with Jimmy and you did congratulate him on making the Super Bowl. And then the other part I'm thinking about it is like, you know, how can I make this relevant to Bill in a way where he can't dismiss it? And it's like, well, Robert Kraft congratulated Tom. That's his boss. So now that's another thing. So then it becomes about formulating the question around that and trying to get him to answer it. And like, ultimately he didn't answer it, but again, you know, that wasn't just like willy-nilly off the top of my head. Like, I woke up that morning and knew, because I thought about it the night before, that I was going to have to ask the question. And I actually, like, typed it out to see, you know, how does this read? And you know, practiced it a little bit and was sort of ready to go. Because with Bill, again, it's like being in a press conference with him, it's like playing chess with Bobby Fischer. I mean, one wrong move and you're dead. Like, it's over. Or for people who've seen Queen's Gambit,
yeah,
right? It's like one wrong move and she has you. Like, you're done. So I really put a lot of time into it. And for that, I tip my cap to Bill.
Well, the other one, too, and I should have pulled it, but the other thing I applauded you for is that you acted like the Bobs in Office Space when you talked to Ernie Adams. And basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, you asked him, what is it exactly you do here?
I did, yeah.
And so, this is a guy that's been attached to the hip of Bill Belichick for the better part of a half century, Chris. Yeah. Like, so what do you make of this, and why now? What do you think happened here?
Ernie's a super smart guy, and this is just my opinion. I don't know anything. Ernie sees the jig is up. No Brady, the jig is up.
You think, like, that's what it is? Yeah.
To a degree.
He's just kinda,
it's a good time to step away. So you have to put so much time into this, and it's rewarding when you're winning, but when you're 7-9, it's not. And I think he sort of sees, like, this is, you know, it's not like you're doing this to win Super Bowls now. And I think he sort of saw the writing on the wall. There's probably other things in Ernie's life he wants to do. And I've always described Ernie as Belichick's Belichick. Like, we all look at Belichick and say, that guy's a football genius. You know, I want to pick his brain. I think Belichick looks at Ernie and says, that guy's a football genius. I want to pick his brain.
He's like, football CIA is what he is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He really knows what he was doing. So, I don't know. You don't think that there's any kind of, there was a push out or anything like that, or because, you know, the drafts haven't gone that well, you know, and Robert Kraft, I think, mentioned that going back a few months going into the offseason.
I know Jones has been big on this.
Like, something's up here.
Yeah.
Like, this might have been a firing.
I mean, it's been a super entertaining listen, Jones, this entire week, and he's really been pushing this theory. But there are certain red lines, I think, for Bill Belichick. And I know Belichick maybe doesn't have complete carte blanche like he used to, but I think firing or pushing out Ernie Adams would be a red line that the Krafts would cross for Bill. I think if they forced Ernie out, I think Bill would say, okay, I'm done. Like, you can't do that to one of my closest friends and, you know, a great confidant and someone who's helped us win a lot of games. I think it was more Ernie, and I just look at Ernie's intelligence level, and I think, like, he did, you know, he calculated the odds and was like, man, Brady's gone. The jig is up here. Like, we're kind of starting over. I think this is maybe a good time to get out.
Yeah, you know, given his age, too, at some point, like, even if you really do love the job and it doesn't feel like work, that old cliche, at some point, like, you got to do something else with your life and live a little, sleep in. Like, at some point, like, you can't work until you're in the grave. John and Drakett wants to go back and talk about the Kemba Walker deal from yesterday, the big news for the Celtics. Kemba Walker out, Al Horford back. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show. Hey, first time calling.
Yeah, go ahead.
Appreciate it. What do you got?
I'm a huge fan of this trade, and there's a few reasons why. I think Al Horford's a good veteran leader that already used to the system. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are used to playing with him already. And I also think that this trade is going to help put the ball in Tatum and Brown's hands more. And all together, I just think it opens up a lot more for the team.
Thanks, John. And so, Chris, I mean, he's speaking to kind of what you believe, that Al Horford actually was, this isn't like a throw-in, this isn't strictly a salary dump. Brad Stevens always liked Al Horford. He fits this offense. He's a big part of this deal.
I do. I mean, look, he's the best you could get back, I think, from the Celtics' perspective and standpoint for Kemba. You needed to shed that salary. But I think they feel like they're getting a usable player back and someone who fits what they do. And before it was Operation Shutdown there with Al last year with OKC, in the 28 games he played, he was pretty decent. I mean, he shot 45% from the field, about 37% from three, and he averaged 14 points per game and 6.7 rebounds. Like, I don't think he's washed up. Now, was he in his prime, Al Horford? No. But do I think he's dropped off precipitously from when he left here? I don't. I mean, I think he's probably 85, 90% of the same player you saw the last time he was here, and that guy can help them.
Yeah, look, and I, you know, smarmily put out there, like, do we have to pretend he's good again? Like, he was always good. I just think a lot of Celtics fans, like you do with pretty much every player on the team, even if it's someone like Jay Crowder, you always overrate him. But he was good here. And take with a grain of salt how he played with Philadelphia, because he just was a bad fit there.
He was a terrible fit there. And now you see why, because of Simmons. Simmons can't shoot. So now it's like three guys who are like 6'10 and above, sort of clogging it up. And they just wanted Al to stand in the corner and shoot threes. And he didn't. That's not his game. I mean, right. He can make threes, but that's not his game. And so it wasn't a fit.
Brandon in Boston on the Celtics trade from yesterday. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call. So I want to say that I like the trade because Kemba Walker's out of here. But for me, we got too many bigs, so for me, I want to trade two bigs for one, and I got two guys out there, Montrezl Harrell or Brook Lopez, if they're willing to give them up. But we still have to fill that void as for the point guard position, and for me, I'm looking for a guy like Ricky Rubio or a guy like Lonzo Ball or Kyle Guy. I don't know if you guys know about Kyle Guy. Kyle Guy.
Chris was just saying he knew.
No,
who
I'm
he
saying
was.
Yeah, I know. I like that. Yeah, no, keep going.
I said I don't know if you know about Kyle Guy, but Kyle Guy is a versatile player, man. He's a point guard and shooting guard. He can create his own shots. He can make people better around him. For me, I would like Kyle Guy. He's only making like what is he making like $500,000 a year. So for me, what would the Kings give up? I'll look at the Kings. What would the Kings give up to get Kyle Guy? I mean, if you guys,
well, Brandon, I'm going to
research. Kyle Guy is a guy that I would target. You know,
yeah,
this guy's
okay.
Versatile.
Well, Brandon, thank you for the call. Like, and if you're talking bigs too, so the thing about, and we've taken these calls and people even saying, well, you know, there's even those that want to see them re-sign Evan Fournier. I'm good. I think he's fine.
Yeah,
his defense
too.
Blows. But like, why these small potatoes moves? Like, can we maybe think big? Could you maybe get Karl Anthony Towns out of Minnesota? I think he's kind of miserable there. I don't think he is the guy, but if you added him somehow with Tatum and Brown, even if that meant you maybe had to move Brown, is that something you'd maybe want to look into? Like, I just want to see this team. If you're going to make, if you have now some money available, can we get a splash move rather than like just, oh, hey, it's some like middling depth piece that people are going to overrate?
I mean, I think they're looking to do that maybe, and B-Rob can speak to this, next offseason. Like, I think they're trying
to get... It's just almost impossible.
I think they're trying to get all their ducks in a row for that 2022 offseason where either free agency or trade, they can make a big splash.
This could be potentially a bridge year. Could be a bridge year to that.
That said, though, B-Rob, is that something you can pull off without, I don't know, turning off Jason Tatum? You know, so I think that's a delicate balance there.
Like, oh, yeah.
You still got to be competitive. You can't be a bridge team. You can't just kind of tank it when you have a guy that I'm not sure how much he even really loves it here in the first place.
100%, especially with how things went last year. So, and we know Brad Stevens, that's not in his DNA either. He was always the one fighting, even back at the beginning of the the rebuild for to get Town here now. So I don't think they're willingly going to do that. But I do wonder whether that is, if you want to get position yourself to be a realistic contender in a year or two, that might be your best way to go about it.
Just quickly, B-Rob, Rubio, you know, that's a name I hadn't thought of, and that's a guy who's out there who is a true point guard. I mean, he can't shoot to save his life, but he is a distributor guy, and he doesn't need shots.
Nope. That'd be a great fit. He makes a little too much money, but who knows? Maybe Tristan Thompson and one of these young guys you don't necessarily want for Ricky Rubio? I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, I'd roll the dice on Ricky Rubio.
All right, and so with that, let's finish up the sports conversation, shall we? We'll say no more. We push away from the table, the sports table, and we will get to five questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5, inside the Gasper studio, if you will, here on 98.5 of Sports. I've got nothing to do with sports.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five! One, two, three, four, and
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
Yes, it's how we wrap up the show each and every week here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. I know you were off last week too, right?
I was off last week, yes. We were both off.
So do they do this, whoever happens to fill in, even if we're not here? And even if it's just someone by themselves, do they just ask themselves the question?
Tracy, it was me and McCone last week.
Uh-huh.
And I asked McCone the questions.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Thanks to Tracy, who always sends great ones in.
Excellent. Yes, she does. She also contributed this week, and I'm all for that because I like the continuity. Anyway, question number one, Chris.
Yes.
Chris Gasper, what was your to-go order from the ice cream truck as a kid?
Oh, Bomb Pop. I remember being outside my grandparents' house.
That's the red, white, and blue?
Red, white, and blue. Yep, Bomb Pop. That was my go-to. I love a Bomb Pop.
I still love a Bomb Pop, too, but I am a creamsicle guy through and through. I love
really?
A creamsicle. Yeah, the orange and the cream together, it's still a flavor that I find
That's so,
delicious.
Like, establishment. That's shocking.
What do you think I would get, like a Choco Taco?
I don't know. I just wouldn't have, you know, pegged you as, like, an establishment ice cream guy.
That stupid SpongeBob ice cream pop that all the kids like. I still hear the truck come through on the street in Melrose, and boy, the kids get up for it. There is something extra about when the ice cream truck gives you the ice cream. You know, I know you can still buy the same crap at the supermarket, but it's just not the same. I feel like there's extra flavor there.
I agree.
Question number two, Chris, horrible traffic is back.
Oh, God.
Do you have any sneaky tricks or shortcuts when it comes to avoiding traffic?
Not that I can say on the air because...
You don't want to give them away or they'll get you arrested?
Both. they're not legal. Oh, man, it's crazy. Like, I think there's people... Here's my theory, and I texted you this the other day. People have been cooped up for so long. There are people who didn't even like to go out or leave their house before the pandemic, but now just because they can, they are. I have to tell you, I've seen more people on the road who I'm like, you don't know how to drive, and you haven't driven a car in 15 years. Like, what is going on?
There's something up. And so I asked this yesterday to open an agenda-free Friday in Felger and Mass. Someone please explain it to me. And I had a bunch of people email and tweet and say, well, Murray, it's because people don't want to take public transportation.
Oh, good point.
I hadn't thought about that. There's still maybe the uncomfortable factor.
Or they don't want to take Ubers.
Yeah. Well, good luck finding one in this city, too. Because you... Brilliant idea, Charlie Baker, saying, you know what? Surge pricing? Who needs it? Good luck finding an Uber when you land at Logan nowadays. Oh, my God. This stupid state. And pass legalized sports gambling, you idiots. Sorry. I've never seen anything like it, Chris. Like,
oh, it's awful.
It's not pre-pandemic levels. It's a whole new level. I gave myself an hour yesterday. I was still 7 minutes late. My little tricks, they no longer work. So it's like, okay, I'm going to be in the parking lot in the tunnel. I come from Melrose going into Dorchester.
Yes.
I think it was a parking lot in the tunnel. I was like, well, I'll get off. I'll cut through the seaport. I cut over the bridge. Bang. It added 12 minutes. No.
Oh,
no.
Man.
Everyone else knows my stupid tricks, and the stupid tricks don't work anymore. It's out of control. So I think part of it is what you're saying. People that used to not go out now go out because we're free. And we, you know, most people have been vaccinated, thankfully, here in this area. So you're out. You need freedom. You're out. So people that don't go out, go out. And people aren't taking public transportation because they're still uncomfortable there. All I know is it's never been worse, especially on a Friday.
Oh.
Where are you people going? Oh, my God.
Oh, so bad. That's why I was saying to you yesterday. It's like, I think I'm going to do the Zoom Felger and Maz like forever because, I mean, obviously my problems making it here on time for that show are well documented. But now forget about it. I could leave 2 hours before my hit. I mean, are you kidding me? Trying to get somewhere on 4 o'clock on a Friday? Please. I could have a helicopter and I couldn't make it in time.
Here's more of a serious question for you. Today, Juneteenth, officially been named a national holiday, rightfully so, and, you know, the emancipation of the final slaves that were forced here against their will. Do you have any concerns, Chris, of it being, like, co-opted? And so a few years from now, it's like, come celebrate Juneteenth. Get 50% off a mattress.
It's funny. I honestly hadn't thought of that. I mean, if anything, my concern is that it sort of just becomes something that's superficial to be like, oh, well, we gave you guys Juneteenth, so you don't need voting rights. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's my concern, that it's like, well, you know, voted that some senator can be like, well, I voted for Juneteenth, so you can't say that I'm racially insensitive or that I am not invested in equality. And it's like, what about this Voting Rights Act that you want to do? Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of voting fraud. That's my concern, that people will use this as a cover and a shield to continue to fight against equality by saying, like, here you go, here's your holiday.
Do you like the name, by the way?
I haven't given it much thought, but I mean, it goes back, you know, some years. So
I know, and it's been around, and now, you know, it's now become more of the national consciousness, and rightfully so. But I just think, like, Emancipation Day, or like,
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, but Independence Day is already taken.
I know,
so,
I know.
Yeah, and also, I have to be honest. I think that the people who are vehemently against something like critical race theory, whatever that is, because it's not what people say it is, I think they like the idea that it's sort of vague. Like, would you want it to be like, hey, Black people out of slavery day? Like, that's kind of like an in-your-face reminder of the wrongs of the country. So I think Juneteenth...
Yeah, that's what it should be called.
You know? It should, but I think Juneteenth is something everybody's more comfortable with.
Question number four, Chris. The U.S.-Canada border still closed.
Yeah.
What's the best part of Canada, in your opinion?
British Columbia.
Yes.
Vancouver, Whistler, that whole area. And there's so many great parts, but... Man, I went out there, I think, in like 2003 or 2004, and I still think about it, dream about it. It was amazing.
That downtown Vancouver is one of the prettiest places I've ever seen in my entire life. It is stunning. Pain in the balls to fly to, because you'll have to stop in like Minnesota. There's no direct flights, obviously, so because of how far it is. But man, that is a stunning area. And those Kumamoto oysters. If you're an oyster fan, you've never had the Kumamotos, you ever go to a place, you see them on the menu, get them. Oh my God, they'll change your life.
I also feel it's just a more attractive breed of human there, male and female.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's
British Columbia.
That's the land of huts over there. It really is. And finally, Chris, how are you going to spend the Father's Day weekend? You seeing your dad tomorrow?
I will not. I have to work at Channel 5, but I'm going to see some family today. So I will bring him his card and wish him a happy Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to my dad, William.
Yes, and happy Father's Day to my dad, Richard. See you tomorrow in North Conway. All right. Well, and happy Father's Day to you and yours. And by the way, as we end too, just a reminder, if you want to get the perfect gift for your dad this Father's Day, you should hire the kid on Cameo here for just $15. I will make a personalized message to your dad. And if you want to make sure you get it within 24 hours, make sure you hit the 24-hour option. Might cost you a little extra, but man, I will guarantee you'll get a message that'll knock your dad's socks off. So find the kid on Cameo. I'll also retweet the link so you can find that. Cameo Big Jim Murray. Cameo Big Jim Murray.
Does your dad have to pay the $15 for a cameo?
Yes. I'll tell you this, just quick, as we so even Sarge, he's like, I wanted to get one for a friend the other day. I was like, yeah, here's the link, Sarge. You got to pay.
You said that to Sarge?
Yeah. All right, so concludes the show. Thanks to Brian Robb for producing. Always a pleasure to see my pal Chris Gasper again. The question of the week, the sound of the week, asking Bill Belichick, hey, did you talk to Brady? Sean Silver's coming up next. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Again, happy Father's Day to your dads out there. Bye.
Bill, I hope this finds you well.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.